Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Really excited to welcome Zach Harper back to the show. Covers the NBA for The Athletic and SiriusXM NBA Radio. And Zach, when you think about the flow of this game five, what shifted the balance there in the second half as the Celtics were able to pull away?
The Celtics decided to play basketball and the Heat didn't. I think it's that simple. Like, it was such an ugly first half, and you saw it. Like, I mean, it was a tale of two halves for Jason Tatum, where the first half he was just awful, and I think that shoulder's really bothering him. He looked like, you know, he looked like he was favoring it quite a bit, and he only had like 4 points on like 1 of 9 shooting in the first half. And then in the second half, it was Jason Tatum again. It was the first team All NBAer. It was the guy who, you know, he had like, I want to say like 18 points on 6 of 11 shooting, and he had a bunch of rebounds and a bunch of assists. He got going. Jaylen Brown got going. And two of those guys getting going on any given night, Miami can usually handle that because they usually have other players stepping up. They didn't have anybody tonight. Like, you know, Bam Adebayo hit some shots once that it was a 20-point game, but he wasn't very good. Like, the Heat weren't very good, and the Celtics did enough in that second half to just completely separate themselves.
Can we talk about the disappearing Miami offense, specifically those five starters? What the heck? Considering the last game in which the five total starters combined for, what, 7 field goals? And now this game where they score even fewer points than what they had in game number 4, and this was on their own court. What the hell has happened to the Miami offense?
Yeah, I mean, last game in 2022, if Victor Oladipo comes off your bench and outscores your entire starting lineup, no offense to Vic. That's
right.
Not a good thing, right? Like, that's a sign that something really bad happened. In this game, I want to try to answer this in a way that is respectful to both sides, because I do think Miami is really banged up. Like, Kyle Lowry can barely move. Jimmy Butler has no bounce. PJ Tucker is playing on one leg. I think that matters. But I also don't want to take away from what Boston is doing. Boston's defense all season long was good. The second half of the season, it was generational. Like, generational, like, defense in a way that, like, we've rarely seen teams dominate in that way. And that is showing up. You know, Marcus Smart, for all the injuries that Miami has, Marcus Smart, he's playing on one good ankle. Robert Williams III is playing on one good knee. And they're still able to just clamp down that defensive effort from them, especially in the second half, but in throughout the whole game and really in this series. I mean, I think I saw a stat, and I'm not going to get it completely right, but it was something like the Miami Heat scored like 58 points per 100 possessions in the half court in that game. To put that into perspective, the trust the process Sixers, who were intentionally trying to lose games, scored about double that, right? Like, just like they scored about double that. And so the Heat were just, you know, they're banged up and they're trying to get through this, and it's a war of attrition, but Boston just clamped down.
When we think back to game number 3, when the Celtics had so many miscues and mistakes and the Heat were able to generate 33 points off turnovers, it almost feels like now if they can't do that, the Heat have no shot because, yes, injuries, but also because the offense has fizzled in the last 2 games without that production from the defense to offense.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not just that it was 33 points off turnovers in game 3. It's that there were 19 live ball turnovers.
Yes.
The Heat had 19 steals, right? Like, if you turn the ball, I mean, turn the ball over is never good. But if you turn the ball over and it goes out of bounds or you travel or whatever, you at least have a chance to set your defense. They didn't do that in game 3. And Miami isn't a team that likes to run a lot, but they like to be opportunistic. And that's what they were in game 3. The last 2 games, they haven't really had that chance. They had a couple of live ball turnovers tonight that they kind of messed up the spacing. They kind of messed up the rhythm of what that fast break should be. But, yeah, like, Boston had just – they started taking care of the ball a lot better the last 2 games, and they just weren't giving away easy transition opportunities with those turnovers.
We're excited to have Zach Harper back on the show again, covering the NBA for The Athletic. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Talked about this on my show, the idea that these two teams are battering and bruising each other to the point that the winner of the East, that team that moves on to the NBA Finals, it's almost like collectively is on one leg to face a Warriors squad that looks pretty darn healthy, especially if Andre Iguodala is able to get back.
Yeah, it feels like the Heat and the Celtics are just climbing up this hill, right? This very steep hill, and there's barbed wire, and there's broken glass, and there's tacks and nails and everything, right? And they're trying to do it. And meanwhile, it feels like the Warriors are on a Segway, and they just found a road that is paved that's very easy to traverse to get to the top of that hill. And they're like, what are you guys doing on, like, climbing through this hill? This is nuts. But yeah, the Warriors, I mean, I don't know that either the Heat or the Celtics will be healthy enough to handle the Warriors. The Celtics defense, I'm assuming they close this out in six now. The Celtics defense is special, but with the way the Warriors play, I don't know that it matches up that easily. They're going to have to be bullies. They're going to have to be super physical, and they're going to have to hope that that doesn't result in a lot of free throws for guys like Jordan Poole, guys like Klay Thompson, guys like Steph Curry, obviously. And if they can avoid putting them on the free throw line, then maybe they can compete. Maybe they can shoot with them. Maybe they can find ways to make that happen. But I also just think they got through a crazy physical Bucks series, only to get through what is likely getting through a crazy physical Heat series. And then the Warriors are going to be like, hey, chase Steph around for seven games.
When you think about the Warriors into their sixth and, well, almost into their sixth NBA Finals, oops, shouldn't jump the gun there, in 8 years, what's your reaction to the fact that Jordan Poole, Andrew Wiggins, even Kevon Looney, but this particular group around Steph, Clay, Dre, has been able to ascend back to this point in essentially a year and a half?
Yeah, and I think when you look at what they were doing last season, like, okay, they made the play-in tournament and they nearly, you know, got through. You know, Memphis does a great job of beating them in that last play-in to get the eighth seed. But that last month and a half was just Steph Curry was one of the greatest scorers we've ever seen, right? For a month and a half, right? Like, he was just carrying them. If you remember, like, you know, Jordan Poole was kind of a thing at that point, but not really. Obviously, no Clay. Draymond was directing the defense. Andrew Wiggins looked like he was completely lost in that system because he had to get a lot of that Minnesota Timberwolves out of him, and he had to figure out how to play with Steph, and that's not easy. It's not easy that – and it sounds so weird to say, but everything, every action with the Warriors' offense has a purpose. Every action is a live ball cut. Every movement is meaningful, and that's just not the case with a lot of teams. Like, some guys are just kind of going through the motion, not expecting the ball. Everything's live for the Warriors, and that's hard to figure out how to play in constantly. You've seen the leaps that he took. I mean, he was an all-star this year. Maybe some of that was K-pop, but whatever. He was an all-star, right? Like, he had a great first half of the season. Jordan Poole, a lot of people thought he should have been in the, you know, more in the mix for most improved player. You know, the way that guys like Damian Lee stepped up at times, Gary Payton II stepped forward and created a career for himself. The way it's come together has just been incredible, and it speaks to the leadership of Steph and Draymond. If you think about it, Clay really hasn't been that good, and yet he's still a threat.
Right.
And Steve Kerr's done a great job of getting guys ready and getting guys in that culture and in that system. And they look like they're ready to win another championship.
Zach Harper is with us from The Athletic and from L.A. here After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. So let's talk about the L.A. basketball team known as the Lakers. This coaching search they're going through is fairly extensive, if you believe the reports. What's the right fit for a team that has a LeBron maybe in the last year of his tenure with the Lakers? We'll see. But a group that clearly was not assembled correctly for this past season and really does have some major question marks.
It would be good if they had a coach who could double as, like, an athletic trainer to get Anthony Davis's body ready, right? Like, it would be good if we could put him back together like Humpty Dumpty who fell off the wall, because it's just – Without AD healthy and on the court consistently, he's a complicated player in the first place because his teams don't really have success ever, and even when you remove LeBron from the court, it looks like the Pelicans again. when AD's in a Lakers uniform. But together, they're clearly a threat, right? They're clearly a threat. And then the whole Russ thing was a mess, and that's not really going to resolve itself. It's going to be more about, I think, the extra pieces they put around than the coach. And it's not that the coach isn't important, and it's not a whole like, well, LeBron really coaches that team. It's just that's going to be half management, half coaching. And the management part of that is just going to be finding rotations that work, finding players who can play some defense, finding guys that can knock down shots, and finding guys that can play together without getting hurt. And it's just very difficult. Like, Rob Pelinka in that front office has their work cut out for them. And whether it's Terry Stotts or Darvin Ham or whoever ends up being the coach, it's going to have to be a lot of people putting egos aside, getting on the same page, and playing basketball in a way that is for the team. They did that the previous 2 years under Frank Vogel. They didn't do that last year. Everything was for the individual last year.
Frank Vogel was an experienced guy who had won in the playoffs, who had the respect of LeBron James, is another experienced coach who's got playoff experience, who would command the respect of LeBron James, the right fit? Or do you just say, I don't know, we start from scratch, especially if he's going to be a sacrificial lamb? That's the weird part about it.
Right, yeah. I guess it's how serious do the Lakers think they are in terms of putting together a title contending team? And you have to hire the coach before you can make the roster moves, right? And not that they won't have things lined up, but you never know what that roster is going to look like. And that will be just as important, as I said. And so it's funny because, like, I think Terry Stotts is a really good coach. I don't know that I'd want him coaching a LeBron team. I think Darvin Ham is going to be a really good coach in this league. I think he has shown, you know, a lot as an assistant. He's very highly regarded. Players love him. Players will play for him. He might be another Ime Udoka type of success story. But is that first job going to be trying to patch together the last years of LeBron's career to make it something title contending? That doesn't sound all that fruitful to me. And so I wish I had an answer for you. I don't know. That thing is so up in the air, and it is such a mess, and they have so much to clean up before I even get to, like, oh, yeah, who should the coach be next year?
It's funny because the Lakers, you would think, would be a premier job where it doesn't matter. Yeah. If you get offered that gig, you take it. No questions asked. Who cares what the salary? I'll volunteer to coach the Lakers if that's what you want. But it's just not that case right now. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Zach Carper's in LA. I want to get your reaction to this report that is in New York, so other side of the country, but just as high a profile name, and in fact a former LeBron teammate, in that the Brooklyn Nets are not interested or leaning away from offering an extension to Kyrie Irving. Now, he's got a player option that he could pick up if he wants for $36.5 million, but according to the New York Daily News, if he doesn't, the Nets may not offer him the big fat extension. So let's just pretend for a second, Zach, that you are offering Kyrie some advice. He's probably not going to take it, but let's just pretend you are. What do you tell him to do?
I don't know how important NBA basketball is to him at this point. I think he loves basketball. I think he considers it an art form. Most of the time when he plays it is an art form.
Mm-hmm.
I think he showed this year the money's not that important to him. He's got a ton of money. Not that he wouldn't want an extra $200 million in the bank, but he's got a lot of money. He's got a lot of business ventures that he can invest in. He's going to make money regardless. I think I would say, where are you going to be the most comfortable? And in a way, it's coddling an adult who has made hundreds of millions of dollars and has been wildly successful at their profession. But I do think he's in a weird space now where he has to feel respected as an artist and understood as a human being and respected as a thought provoker and all this stuff. And some of it's correct and some of it's just BS, right? Like, some of it is just roll your eyes. Yes, I too took philosophy 101 when I was in college. I get it. Like, half the time he sounds like a kid home for Thanksgiving break after his first quarter at college, and trying to expound on all these like theories that he's read from this philosophy book. And like, I get it, but I think ultimately if you're happiest with Kevin Durant and you respect him and you feel comfortable being his teammate, stay in Brooklyn, But if I'm Brooklyn, I don't want to give him long-term money. Like, where has that trust been? That trust hasn't been there with his body, let alone his mind. So I don't know how you would feel comfortable with that.
I mean, if I'm Kyrie, I'd take the money. But I'm definitely not Kyrie. One more thing, Zach, before I let you go. What's another off-season storyline that you're really intrigued by as we get closer?
You know, I think it's going to be what the Dallas Mavericks do. Not to, you know, not to throw dirt on this season that they're still very much in. I don't believe they're going to be the first team to come back from 0-3 in NBA history. So I think, you know, they had a great jump. I don't know if it's going to end up looking like Atlanta, you know, with Atlanta going to the conference finals and Atlanta last year or this past year, you know, kind of just not really taking it seriously and not taking the regular season as seriously as they need to and kind of showing a lack of maturation there. This team for Dallas is a little bit more mature than that and has a little bit more experience. So I don't think it'll go that way. But do they go out and are they super aggressive to go get, like, Rudy Gobert if he's available or go try to find a defensive center that is better than Dwight Powell that is going to fix a lot of what they want to do just in terms of playing with size and playing with mobility and having a vertical spacer for Luka Doncic to throw lobs to? Are they going to go find another wing that they can play? Are they going to lose Jalen Brunson in free agency because the Knicks want to give him $500 million, whatever that's going to end up being? Like, you know, where their roster goes, because they had so much great success under Jason Kidd, who has done a great job in this first year with Dallas. I think they're probably the most intriguing. And then maybe on top of that, what does Memphis do? Does Memphis feel like, all right, this core is together, this core will be successful. If we have John Morant healthy, we're going to be a lot more dangerous in the playoffs. Or do they maybe package some of those younger players and go try to get another star to throw into the mix? Those two teams have shown so much this year, and I do think they're the future of the NBA, and I'm interested to see where they go.
It's a lot of potential for this offseason, if what we've seen in the past few years is any indication. But we still have a champion to crown. You can follow Zach on Twitter at Talk Hoops. Really simple, at Talk Hoops. He covers the league for The Athletic. You can also hear him on SiriusXM NBA. It's always fun to catch up with you, Zach. Thank you so much for a few minutes.
Thanks, Amy. Anytime.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay. Picture this, it's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road, the steeper the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.